welfare. The very word causes many people to react either with anger or in defense. Those who oppose it grow angry. Those who support it are just as vociferous in defending it. But why? When it began 65 years ago during the Great Depression, it was welcomed and much valued. What has happened to change that? That's the subject of this week's op-ed by Professor Linda Gordon.
In the U.S. Constitution, promoting the public welfare was one of the noble goals of our new government. Today, welfare has become a dirty word. How did this happen? The program we came to call welfare was part of the Social Security Act of 1935, along with unemployment compensation, aid to the blind and the crippled, and the pensions for the elderly that eventually came to be associated with that law. Social Security, along with emergency welfare to help Americans survive the Depression, was the most popular achievement of our most popular 20th century president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But an enormous shift happened in the next 50 years. The piece of Social Security that was most controversial then became the most beloved now, and a piece that had no opposition then became the most hated. In 1935, many objected to public pensions for the elderly. They condemned the family values of a law that shifted the responsibility for the elderly to the government, because they thought it was the responsibility of grown children to repay parents for the support they had received. By contrast, the program called Aid to Dependent Children was universally approved of. To the logic of the time, who could object to rescuing poor children who had no father able to support them? To make old age pensions acceptable, the government conducted a propaganda campaign to convince Americans that the elderly had earned public support by earning wages. To make old age pensions seem earned, they were based on an additional payroll tax, although in fact the monthly payments are not related to how much a worker paid in. They are paid to retirees of all income levels and paid in a dignified manner, without requiring recipients to accept invasions of privacy. Meanwhile, age-dependent children was paid from general taxes, actually a fairer way of distributing the burden. Only the very poorest were eligible, so that the prosperous classes felt they had no stake in ADC, and the recipients had to submit to humiliating surprise investigations of their homes, their morals, and their housekeeping. The constant search for welfare cheaters conveyed to the public the notion that the very receipt of welfare was somehow dishonorable. Conservative attacks on the morality of welfare mothers hid the fact that the vast majority of welfare recipients are children. Because poverty and single motherhood in the U.S. are disproportionately high among people of color, welfare recipients were further stigmatized by racism. And the biggest stigma of all is embedded in the term welfare itself. Many Americans now believe that welfare recipients live on other people's money, when in fact, old age pension recipients collect more of other taxpayers' money than do welfare recipients. It's time we got rid of these myths and thought about our whole welfare state rather than stigmatizing only those benefits that help children, parents, and the poor.
You've been listening to Linda Gordon, Florence Kelly Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin and New York University. This is Talking History. Rock and roll is considered one of America's greatest cultural exports to the world. It's certainly among the most incredible phenomena of American cultural history. And now we have a new kind of museum dedicated to its past. Here to tell you about that museum is Talking History's Cindy Workman.
What started as a simple idea for a storefront museum in Seattle about Jimi Hendrix grew to a $250 million vision called the Experience Music Project. The Interactive Music Museum opened to the public in June, and it showcases more than 85,000 items chronicling the birth of rock and roll and current music styles. When you enter the museum, designed by architectural icon Frank Gehry, the first thing you encounter is the Sky Church, a Jimi Hendrix term for a large space where people can gather freely to listen to music. From there, you wander into the collection galleries, including the Hendrix Gallery, and there is also the Guitar Gallery, with an 18th century gem and a 1935 Seattle-made audiovox. You won't find the British Invasion here, as EMP restricts itself to American music. There is even a sound lab where you can get computer-assisted tutorials on guitar, drums, and keyboard. The $19.95 entrance fee for the museum more than guarantees you a fun day spent in the world of music.
Turning to coming attractions, Norman Rockwell may be too nice for some, but it is the innocence and nostalgia his pictures exude that have made him one of the nation's most popular artists. Some say it has been a long time in coming, but the first major retrospective exhibit of Rockwell's work has opened at the Corcoran Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. Norman Rockwell, Pictures for the American People, will remain at the Corcoran until September 24th and then move on to several different venues around the country. The next stop is the San Diego Museum of Art, where it will be on view from October 28th through December 31st. Contact either the Corcoran or San Diego Museums for more specific information, including future exhibit sites. Switching from the museum to TV, the History Channel will soon set off in search of Life on Mars and Jack the Ripper. On September 11th, in the search for Life on Mars, the History Channel will trace man's journey of discovery of this fascinating planet, as well as his obsession with discovering life on our nearby neighbor. On September 18th, viewers will be able to review all the evidence gathered since 1888 on one of the world's most infamous murderers, Jack the Ripper, the perpetrator of seven as yet unsolved murders. Be sure to check your local listings for exact showtimes. And that's it for another week of Talking History. I hope you've enjoyed our program and that you will join us next week when, just in time for this year's event, we will take a look at the history of the Olympics. Until then, we invite you to send us your comments or suggestions either by email at talkinghistory@creighton.edu or by U.S. mail to Talking History, care of the Department of History at Creighton University, Omaha, Nebraska, 68178. From the studios of KIOS FM in Omaha, Nebraska, this is Brian LeBeau.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal, and the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and